Okay, my favorite tweet during that one was, as a vegetarian, I'm so relieved there's at least salad at this shindig.
Hi guys, we're here still, catching up on our badly lapsed podcast, that we love doing but have had no time to do because we opened another bookstore and made a book and took our show to a bunch of cities. But now we're back.
Yeah,
we're back.
You don't care about our busyness. You just care about
the fucking podcast. You're like vultures. You're
that's
like
what
locusts.
We like about you.
You're like fucking locusts.
You delicious locusts.
You delicious fucking locusts. So a thing happened where this country had an election and then everyone got really mad. And then everyone started buying 1984 like it was going to help them do something. at some point in early 2017, we stopped being able to keep enough copies of 1984 in stock. So we thought, hey, you know what we should do? 1984. Which had been on our list for a long time, in fairness, but yep. The time just really seemed right. So, so we did that. And this was right after Booksmith was, like, totally in the news. I was actually quoted on CNN about our crazy 1984 thing. So for anyone who missed it, basically a bunch of people started coming into our store and buying... Oh, by the way, this is Shipwreck. I'm Amy. That's Casey.
I'm Casey.
Sorry. I'm Casey. I did that right as he was yawning. This is the Shipwreck podcast, which is recorded at Booksmith in the Upper Haight, which is a real live independent bookstore. And in the early months of 2017, a bunch of people decided that they were going to come into our store and buy copies of 1984, usually like anywhere between 10 and 50 copies at a time, because it's a little paperback, and ask us to just give them away for free at the counter. And this cool thing happened where, like, the local press picked it up, you know, it was on Hoodline, and then, like, the regional press picked it up, and it was on, like, the Chronicle, and then, like, the national press picked it up, and then the international press picked it up, and, like, I was on CNN, and Kristen was on BBC Radio, and it became this whole crazy thing that, like, people lost their fucking minds over. So this was about when we were like, hey, maybe we should do 1984. Seems to be a thing that we're known for. So we decided to do it, which means that I had to actually read it for the first time. Because in high school, I read Brave New World. I don't know why they chose that one instead, but that's what we had to read, which I still kind of think is a better book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think Orwell's a bit of a nihilist.
Yeah, it was also just like...
I'm not sure that Brave New World is any less nihilistic, though.
It's also not any less like... Wouldn't it be so bad if white dudes had to live the way the rest of everybody does? Like, what if rich people had it hard, too? Like, that's what it felt like to me. In this sort of very oblivious, kind of, like, detached way that I found it really hard to, like, relate to. Whereas, you know, I mean, obviously, it's so cliche to call the Handmaid's Tale, like, feminist 1984, but that felt so much more, like, relevant to me.
No, I get it. Also, there's, like, this whole...
Even Brave New World felt more relevant because it was like, oh, you're being entertained to death, whereas this was, like, so much more, like, the authoritarianism is, like, ah. Like, it just didn't...
This is about communism, so it's, like,
yeah,
exactly. And living in late-stage capitalism, it makes it kind of difficult to be, like, oh, well, capitalism is such a better dogma.
Right. It's just so weird.
Yeah.
It felt weird that this was the book that everybody was, like, drawn to, but I guess this is probably not the time for that discussion. Point is, we did 1984, and I finally read it, and it was something. He's got issues with women, huh? So we did that, and it was fun. Our first character was Big Brother, because you gotta assign Big Brother. He's, like, the big eye that watches you. He's he's more of a concept, really, than a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's got, like, a picture, I guess.
He does have a picture, I guess.
Our first story tonight is titled Inner Party Backdoor Sex Barbecue. Here we go. Big Brother was feeling extra horny, brimming with anticipation and pre-cum at the thought of Hate Week, and decided he just couldn't wait to become a glistening, suckling pig on a rotisserie. So he decided to throw a sexy barbecue for some of his inner party colleagues. A sexy barbecue means heavy petting and tongue orgies in the front, Lots of slathered slabs in the back. Big Brother is at the grill with O'Brien. O'Brien, which one of these do you want? The hot Italian wiener or the raw prime grade beef? Big Brother, you know which one I prefer. O'Brien, oh really? But which one can you handle? Oh, please, said Big Brother. I can handle any hunk of meat as long as it is cut. Big Brother. Preferences? Big Brother takes some meat off the grill and offers it to O'Brien to try. O'Brien, what is it? Sirloin? Top or bottom? Big Brother, top, duh. I thought you'd prefer bottoms. Anyways, why don't you invite a few pros over? You know, just for looking. Big Brother, you know these guys. As soon as there's someone remotely attractive in the flesh, everyone gets awkward and flaccid. Bad for inner party vibes. O'Brien, why do we all have to be such socially inept pricks, right? Big Brother, because you nerds are the only ones who can get the telescreens to work. That's why you completely lack any social skills or ability to fuck without a screen in between you and some poor fool, glassy-eyed bastard. O'Brien, too fucking true. Damn. Like, I can only naturally get hard for a hate fuck. Thank God I still have that, otherwise pass the Viagra, you know what I mean? Oh, that's why you love white dudes so much. Oh, I get it. Just then, Mark Zuckerberg appears naked. He is nude outside and starts to yell, "Who's gonna toss this salad, bros?" O'Brien chimes in and says, your approach is very unappetizing. Friend me first, you barbarian, and maybe I'll grace you with felching privileges, okay? Zuckerberg looked a little shocked, but then went, look, I need butt stuff, okay? I'll definitely follow you if you agree to take my feed. Big Brother, all right, now I'm remembering why I invited him to the inner party. I'll be right back. Watch these meat skirts, O'Brien. Mark Zuckerberg and Big Brother go inside. As they walk through the house, they see Larry Page teabagging Elon Musk. Yelling, now it's time for my 2 minutes of hate. Gumming your micropenis while I think about my mother. At which point, Larry removes his new invention, dentures that also double as super speed Wi-Fi hotspots. Finally, they reach the study, which had been personally decorated by Martha Stewart in a nautical motif while she was wheelbarrowed around the room. Butt booty naked, with a gag in her mouth, by Snoop Dogg. Big Brother and Mark immediately suctioned each other's mouths together, its airtight seal only broken by wet tongues, lashing about like the tentacles of an enraged kraken, drenched in brackish waters, desperately seeking semen to swallow. Big Brother says, I usually only fuck Asians, but I'll make an exception for you. I'll just pretend I'm fucking your father-in-law. Big Brother is trying to get in the mood, but he just can't. He just can't get past Mark Zuckerberg's creepy dead eyes. Bro, I keep trying, but it's just not working. How the fuck does your wife do this? He asks as he scans Mark's pale, butchered pigskin. We only do it if there's like a strap on. Oh, and a muzzle and a whip, handcuffs and a gag. And, you know, like the whole Mormon Tabernacle Choir watching us, which I can't afford to make happen. Oh, and ketamine, like a goofy amount of ketamine. Yeah, I don't know about this. I'm gonna go see if the orgy is still going on. I've got a massive pearl necklace to unload on Eric Schmidt. I owe him for the dirty Sanchez he gave me at the last barbecue. Zuckerberg goes, no, come on. Don't you want to put your mouth around this big, fat, juicy tenderloin and help me displace all its poor tenants? No thanks, said Big Brother. Not into it. I forgot how weirdly babyish your face is. It's giving me cotton mouth and like a soft penis. Even if you are using juicy meat puns, no. Mark Zuckerberg was not taking no for an answer. No, but come on, I need butt touching and ass eating and face punching and chest dizzing. Come on. Mark grabs Big Brother from behind and presses his boner into Big Brother's back. He reaches around to hold Big Brother, but he is still very, very limp. But Big Brother is now really irritated and turns around to grab Mark by the shoulders. You are so annoying. Angry face emoji. Do you get that, Mark? Mark screams back. Oh, yeah? Well, am I really pissing you off? I'm glad. I want you to get so fucking pissed off. Then, you know, like, take that piss and live stream all over my face. Come on, Big Brother. Do it. Do it. Come on. You are so fucking lucky that I'm starving and there's nothing here I would put in my mouth and that you're so annoying. I want to shove my dick in your face just to make you shut the fuck up. And that I want to use your father-in-law like a rickshaw, which, by the way, can you, like, make that happen already? I've been emailing you for months. And he hasn't accepted my friend request. Yeah. Okay, I'll do what I can to hook you up with him. But can you, like, hate fuck me already? Pretend I'm one of your naughty Eurasians. I mean, East Asian. Whatever. Double think. Just double fist me, okay? Big Brother turns Mark Zuckerberg around, bends him over, holds his hands behind his back, and starts shoving a porcelain bust of Martha Stewart into Mark's surprisingly welcoming anus. Do you like that? Do you like that? He yells. More, more, Mark Zuckerberg goes. More into my butt. Check into my butt. Let your network know. Tell everybody. Tweet about it. Mark yells in response. Then Big Brother whips him around and blows like Twitter's initial public offering. Mark's venture capital disappearing in a sad drizzle down Big Brother's shirt. The end.
And that was Big Brother, as written by Moon Cho.
Moon Cho, who I've been dying to get on the show forever and was thrilled to finally have her. Great. So we decided to include Julia, even though we went back and forth about whether or not to actually include any female characters because it kind of felt mean.
Yeah, a lot of the times we get these books and it's like, cool, there are two female characters. And you're like, oh, shit, that dude's piled a lot of his aggression on that character.
She doesn't need any more shit from us. Like, that's how we often feel. So people are like, how come you don't put the female characters? It's like, our whole thing is punching up, which I know, again, is like a really cliche thing. But like, to us, it's important. Like, if this book is like written by a dude and centers all the dudes and the women just like take everyone's shit. I mean, Julia literally, like, he basically rapes her and she is like, haha, I didn't know you were attracted to me. It's insane. So it felt like really weird to include the female characters sometimes, but we definitely, like, we did it because we knew we had a good list and people we could trust. And
yeah, it's so impossible because it's like, oh, we like her because she's sexually free, but then also that makes her stupid and all.
And
these,
that's
like,
what he's trying to write. He's trying to write her as stupid for being sexually free, which is like, you know, that's a big problem for us. That's like our whole thing that we're trying to avoid people making fun of. So we can only do that, like, when it's somebody we really trust. So obviously this whole lineup is people we've known and trusted for a long time. So we decided to do it. So you get a female character, and here it is.
This next story is simply titled Julia. It was another colorless, smog-filled day, and Julia woke up with an itch she could not scratch. No, not that one. Not that she couldn't get, not the one where she can't get checked because of debilitating lack of women's health care. But one where she needed to be fucked so harsh she could topple the current regime with only the divine force of her vagina. You see, it was outlawed long ago for people to have sex, creating thriving underground fuck clubs masked as junior anti-sex leagues. Julia had been to many, after all. She had to dedicate her free hours to the party somehow. Today was different, though. Today, she needed more than getting fisted by one of the other girls she worked with in the Ministry of Truth bathroom. She wanted a spectacle, to be seen by the entire world, but especially by Big Brother. Though some in the country liked Big Brother, it didn't take long for everyone, almost at once, to think he was a pile of flaming diarrhea. His constipated-looking orange face plastered on the walls of streets and TV screens were quickly driving the people of the country insane with his backward laws and all-around jackass personality. If Julia was going to have the sexual extravaganza that she wanted, she needed someone new. Not one of the same easy picks from Junior Anti-Sex League, no. You know, those ones that who say they're all about celibacy until you get them alone while making anti-sex posters and end up being eaten out on top of a banner that reads, never erect, never wet, don't do something you'll regret. And another one that reads, who's Big Brother now? Julia would ask them sometimes that as they were eating her out, who's Big Brother now, she would say, while they were tongue deep in her vagine. Those used to be her favorite fucks, but they had become so dependable and stale. She was used to getting some sexually frustrated douche in a Make America Great Again hat beg for her pussy, while she made them say, Bernie should have been president. Say it. Say it, you little bitch. And they would. They would say it. Bernie should have been president over and over and over again. Until she would almost climax at the thought and proceeded to rock that dick like Bernie would have wanted. All day at work, Julia scanned the area for a prime new fuck and almost passed over what would be her greatest conquest of all. Sitting a few tables away was a sad, obviously internally screaming man. He looked like the kind of guy who thought they were so progressive but would say fucked up things like, I don't see color, but I just don't understand why black people can't cooperate when they get pulled over. You know, stupid fucked up shit like that. Julia realized at once that he obviously thought his hardships were worse than those around him. And Julia loved that sad white male privilege shit. She especially liked to break them in and break them of it. She knew the man's name was Winston and made it her mission to mount him by the end of the day. All she needed was a way to get him interested. But how could he not be? I mean, look at her. She was a dime that's top of the line, cute face, slim waist with a big behind. She fucked an old guy once who, after being caught, killed himself rather than give her up as well and have no one else experience her bomb-ass coochie. Just then, Winston went to leave the area and she followed close behind. As soon as no one was around, she was able to shove Winston into the closest empty room. I love you, she said. Wanna fuck? She didn't love him, but she knew he'd eat that shit up. Once looking around the room, they realized it was covered in telescreens, that they were already watching and soon about to report them to the thought police. But this is what Julia wanted. A spectacle, and the entire world was going to see it. She wasted no time and, seemingly without moving at all, magically somehow took off hers and Winston's overalls within seconds. Winston observed that Julia had fashioned herself a harness out of shoelaces and other small appliances that could be bought without suspicion. She was crafty as fuck. With her experience at both making celibate douchebags beg for her poontang and partaking in the impromptu bathroom fuck sessions, Julia was always prepared for an encounter. Needing to conceal her dildo somewhere inconspicuous, she pulled it from between her legs and then masterfully attached it to the harness. Winston could tell that the dildo was made from everyday things, like the almost cement-like food they were forced to eat every day. DIY Pinterest shit like that made Winston's cock so hard. From one of her overall pockets, Julia took out a whip, also made out of shoelaces and some wire tape. She made Winston get on his hands and knees in the middle of the surrounding telescreens. Sliding one end of the whip slowly back and forth over his ass, she asked him, "Do Black Lives Matter, Winston?" Winston paused for way too long and then started to say, "Well, technically all lives..." Which was when she whacked him across the ass as hard as she could. It was painful, but also ecstasy at the same time. "What's your opinion on women's health care, Winston?" "It's not a subject I should have an opinion about." "Good boy," Julia said as she moved her dildo to caress the outside of his almost quivering asshole. "Finish this sentence," she said. "Trans people are..." After taking a moment and thinking for way too long, Winston replied, human. With that, Julia thrust her dildo half inside of Winston, and he gave out a small moan of pleasure that made Julia smirk. She exited him and whispered, "You can have it all if you answer this correctly." Winston nodded his head. He was in more anguish from the anticipation than her whip. She looked him directly in the eyes and asked, "Is or was this country ever great?" "No," Winston responded. Before he knew it, he was being entered again, this time with full force and length. Julia rammed him like no other, knowing that it may well be the last time she fucked or got fucked for the rest of her life. Right when he was about to climax, she stopped, turned him over, removed her dildo, and put his erect penis into her lady cavern. She rode his dick like a roller coaster. If she had ever actually ridden a roller coaster and knew to make that analogy, let's just pretend that she does. Just as Julia and Winston were simultaneously orgasming, the thought police burst through the door. Their united orgasm was so powerful that they came all over themselves and all over the people who had just entered the room. Lady jizz and man jizz was everywhere. Both Winston and Julia died. Of ecstatic ecstasy. Before anyone could escort them away, the telescreens had projected their rendezvous for the world to see. It subsequently killed Big Brother, for he was not strong enough to stand the euphoria of such a climax and perished. It brought about a revolution of fucking in the streets, fucking everywhere, so much that the thought police couldn't contain and collapsed the regime. The site of that historical fuck has an erected dildo monument to Julia for bringing down the totalitarian dictatorship with the most epic fuck in history. The end.
That was Julia as written by India Sabate.
Who's another one of our Twitter followers who finally converted to a writer, which I was very excited about. She's been coming to the show for years, and she finally wrote, and I was like, "But you're so funny on the internet. I'm so glad." And she won.
That came in first, yeah.
That was our first place finisher.
That's a rare first act first.
I love when that happens. First act, first time writing, and she won.
Love
Bless.
It.
Bless. Love. Oh, She's coming back for it.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Great. So we have the Thought Police up next. They are... Remind me their deal. They like, it's not that they can hear, they like punish you before you've committed a crime. That's
yeah, they have thought crime.
Yeah, that's right. Thought crime.
So like things you do are indicative of thought crime. patterns of behavior are indicative of thought crime.
I feel like I always sound really stupid on these podcasts, but I just want to tell everybody that I read 3 books a week and sometimes I don't remember all of them. Yeah.
We make the mistake of reading all of these books, but then we record the podcast
literally months after. I mean, it's like, 6 months after I read this book? But they're the ones that arrest you for thought crimes, which are crimes that you haven't committed, but you've thought about committing.
This next story is titled The Thought Police, A Coming of Age Story. I needed to get out. I needed to reinvent myself. I needed a start over, as one does after experiencing intense grief and estrangement. Plus, I've always been fascinated by other people's lives, when I wasn't so steadfastly enduring my own, of course. So now, here I sat, a 25-year-old woman on the 100th floor of Mini Love, staring at an inky photocopied pamphlet in a drab waiting room. Future thought police, Big Brother wants you. Are you inquisitive and curious? A student of human behavior, okay with nudity, smug with self-righteousness. Any and all are welcome. Join today. The spelling of thought is not what I imagined. THOT question mark? I smoothed my bangs and pursed my lips, confused. Must be some new speak thing, but as far as requirements were concerned, I was definitely overqualified. As a writer, I've spent my life questioning and observing other people's actions, personalizing them, and then repurposing them as if they were my own experiences. So, check mark. As far as nudity goes, I am very okay with it. Check mark. I am not sure about the smugness, but I do consider myself the voice of a generation. It's just what I am. It's just what I've been called. So obviously, I'm going to be like the Beyonce of the thought police. Check. Yes. I mean, yes. I moved to Oceania by way of Brooklyn to escape the cruelest of realities. My boyfriend Adam dumped me and began a sexual relationship with my best friend Jessa. The heartbreak was too much to bear. Adam was my first true love. Our relationship was built on pure animalistic passion. At night, images of our tryst flashed through my mind like a telescreen. The biting, the spanking, the being thrown against a bookshelf. For the past few months, I'd wake up in the middle of the night drenched in my own sweat. My cotton drugstore Hanes, her ways, sewed completely through. I would search the bed for a familiar beefy arm, a lanky leg, or hairless chest, yet I was all alone. Honestly, at this point, anywhere, even a dystopian empire was better than Brooklyn. I looked up. The room was desolate, colorless, and damp, like a clinician's office where everyone is coughing up gray phlegm. Ew. I hadn't seen anyone manning the reception since I had signed in, so I impatiently waltzed up to the desk and cooed, hello? Yoo-hoo? Anyone? My name is Hannah. I'm here to become part of the thought police. My vocal fry echoed off the metal filing cabinets and brick walls all the way to the back of the building. I shrugged winsomely and turned to walk back to my seat. Tired of sitting, I wandered around the waiting room, dragging my orange polished nails against the walls until they grazed a lopsided poster. I stepped back. 2, 3, 4. Oh, is that Tom Selleck? I looked and squinted closer. Yup, I'm pretty sure that's an unmustachioed Tom Selleck. I'd never noticed how much Big Brother looked like Magnum P.I. before, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I wasn't into it. I grew up watching Friends, and honestly, when he started dating Monica, I watched like every episode he was on twice. I started to feel my cheeks flush and my nipples, or nips as they're called in newspeak, become hard against the inside of my blue overalls. I brushed my hands against them from the outside and looked around. I was all alone. I unsnapped my top buttons to expose my pert breasts. It'd been so long since I'd been touched, like basically a week. I had banged a college student on the train to Oceania. The loudest sound in the waiting room had been buzzing the floor. Sorry. The loudest sound in the waiting room had been the buzzing fluorescent lights until, creak, bang, it was the sound of a metal door furiously swinging open. My heart started to race. Loud footsteps approached from behind. I could tell they were a man's footsteps because, well, I'm a writer. And I'm very good at observing things like that. The door from the back of the warehouse flung open into the waiting room. It was it? Yeah, it was. It was Tom Selleck. Without a mustache, I think. What do you want? He snorted grumpily. I'm busy surveilling hundreds of thousands of people right now. He was sweaty with anger, and his overalls were unbuttoned just enough to expose a triangle of his hairy barrel chest. I'm Hannah, and I wanted to join the thought police today, I said timidly, tilting my head down and batting my eyelashes at him like I was trying to get out of a traffic ticket. I mean, if you'll have me, I paused. I feel like I'm very, very qualified. 5, 6, 7, 8. At the same moment, we both noticed that my breasts were still fully exposed. He looked me up and down, really seeing me this time. He stepped towards me. My breath quickened. You want to know if I'll have you? He hummed, lowering his 6'4" frame to my level. His Rockford Files chin square in my mouth, well, square with my mouth, my wet lips, my tongue ready. Yes, I whispered, blinking furiously. My OCD was in full effect. Before I could utter another word, Big Brother kissed me furiously with a savage energy I had only ever experienced with Adam. He grabbed me around the waist and I swung my fleshy thighs around him. I could feel the burden of Oceana's jingoism on his shoulders. He smelled like soot and dust and sweat. I've never wanted to eat any of those things, certainly not all at once. But at that moment, I was hungry. I wanted to consume him sloppily like a cupcake in a bathtub. He laid me down on the cold concrete floor of the waiting room and ripped my overalls open. He commanded me to rip his open, but I knew my upper body strength was lacking. I made a dent and he finished it off, exposing his sturdy masculine bod. I looked down. Oh, wow, I lauded. Now I know why they call you Big Brother. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you noticed, he interrupted, raising his dark Neanderthal brow suggestively with the gravitas of Tom Selleck. Okay, but like, is this Tom Selleck though? A bead of sooty sweat landed on my milky white breast as he entered me. I cooed like a swan, arching my back as he bit my neck. Actually, I probably yelped more than I cooed, just to like, to be honest. This was a lot to take in. Not to mention, I hadn't even interviewed for the Thought Police job yet. But a girl's gotta do what a girl's gotta do. I ran my fingers through his thick, dark hair. He grunted and pinned my hands to the ground as he thrust it slowly and firmly with determination. I can't believe I'm fucking the guy from Three Men and a Baby, I thought. Can I ask you a question? I moaned between thrusts, my legs still wrapped around him and quivering. He grunted, piercing me with his deep stare as he perched atop my body. What they said was true. He was good at watching people. I'm not sure I could ever be that good at it. Maybe this wasn't the job for me. What was it like on the set of Taxi? I was climaxing. This was intense, transcendent. Adam had never taken me there. I saw colors that didn't even exist. I felt like electricity was shooting out of every orifice, every limb. I was howling helplessly and coughing a lot. 2 minutes hate? More like 2 minutes great. My eyes glazed over. I could no longer meet Big Brother's constant gaze. Then everything went black. When I came to wearing my freshly ripped overalls, I was slouched down in a drab gray chair. I looked around. Alone again, I thought. I stumbled up to the reception window. My name had been crossed off the waiting list. I inhaled sharply. Wait till I tell Marnie about this. The end.
Give it up for Baruch!
And that was The Thought Police, as written by Kaylee Quick.
Fucking another Killing My Lobster person.
This is where we started like putting it together, and we're like, okay,
wait
well,
a minute,
a lot
they're
of good
really
people
funny. Yeah,
we should do a thing with them.
We should do a thing with them, and it's going to be a great thing. I can't wait for that thing. If that thing hasn't happened,
it has
by now.
It,
what's
it did.
Time?
What a cool thing that happened.
Time is weird. Where are we? Oh yeah, so the fiction department is a division of. Do you remember?
It's the
Ministry of Truth.
Ministry of Truth, and they like. I know that they have a lot of like physical apparatus of. Book
yeah because like, they're like editing text after the fact to match things that the government has decided to change, even if those things are facts.
Yeah, they redact like fictional books, they change them, and they like yeah. change the you know, it's
you know
whatever, like a dude in whenever this book was written. When was it written? 1942.
Yeah, it was, I think it was actually, wasn't it 48? Because I remember being
that
like,
feels better than 42.
Backwards of 84, right?
Yeah.
I think it was 48.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so
I'm
like.
I'm so, I can't wait for everyone to text me that I'm wrong about that, but go on.
Just some dude that's like, oh, what would be the worst things they'll do? Oh, they'll have fiction books being
burnt. Well, what if they changed
burnt
to fiction?
Yeah. That's the thing that we use to interpret the facts.
Fahrenheit 451. There's another good dystopian book that's better than this one. Whatever.
I like that book.
I love that book.
But it has another like. Let's heap all our garbage
on
these
the one
characters.
Female character. On the only female character.
Anyway. Our next story is titled Big Brother Is I Fucking You. Big Brother knew that it would take extraordinary minds to run the fiction department. In order to provide approved entertainment for the masses, the fiction department had to be precise, creative, brilliant. Which is why Big Brother knew he'd made the right decision when he appointed Beavis and Butthead as the heads of fiction. Beavis and Butthead, legendary heroes of the nuclear wasteland, formerly known as Texas, had risen in the ranks. Once idiotic teenage rebels with a lust for boobs and heavy metal, they were now idiotic grown men who blindly followed orders. After several positive reviews with Big Brother and other Department of Truth heads, Beavis and Butthead were rewarded with a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, the freedom to write and publish their own pornographic novel. The two men hurried back to their office in the fiction department for their assignment. I'm sorry, guys. I never watched the show. I'm gonna try. Y'all are gonna have to forgive me. I'm sorry. I did not have cable growing up in the 90s. We were poor. Said Beavis as he sat down and started to sketch out some ideas. Butthead chuckled back at Beavis as he stared up at a blank chalkboard. For hours, Beavis and Butthead went back and forth, laughing and drawing and writing. They raced from the drawing pad to the chalkboard, sketching out their main character. Beavis opened the office window to throw a crumpled up piece of paper at one of the workers when his eyes met Julius. His chuckling stopped, and he turned back to Butthead, whispering into his ear. They nodded and waved her over to their office. She rushed over as Beavis and Butthead tried to organize their documents. Hi, Julia, Butthead said. reaching out to shake her hand. Thank you for joining us today. Yeah, thanks, Beavis said, as he pulled out a chair for her. We appreciate you taking time out from your busy schedule. Julia glanced back out at the work floor to see that one of the printing machines had caught on fire. But she didn't say a thing. She smiled. Of course, she said. It's no trouble at all. Butthead cleared his throat, hands shaking as he placed his papers down on the table. Would you mind giving this a quick review? We want some feedback about the main character. Beavis and Butthead nervously chuckled as Julia started to read through their rough draft. Her brow furrowed. She finished two chapters and glanced back at them, puzzled. With all due respect, Mr. Beavis, Mr. Butthead, she began. This is shit. What? They both exclaimed. But there's so much sex in there. They grabbed their pages from her and started pointing at different lines. Yeah, look, Beavis pointed. Here the main character comes when the guy on the horse grabs her boobs. And this part is one of my favorites, Beavis explained, waving the page in front of Julia. Cornholio makes her squirt in delight as soon as he puts his penis in her vagina. Instant orgasm for Cornholio. Classic. Julia sighed. She glanced at the chalkboard to see a very crudely drawn woman with boobs as big as basketballs. Stick figure. She could practically see them bouncing from her seat. Suddenly, a thought popped into Julia's mind. Gentlemen, may I ask you something, she said, calmly pacing the room. And please, don't take offense to this. She took a deep breath, knowing the question could lead to her end. Have either of you actually had sex before? Beavis and Butthead started nervously chuckling again. Of course we've had sex. I love boobs. I love them, Beavis said, anxiously gripping the hem of his t-shirt. Butthead eagerly nodded. Yeah, what are you talking about? I love sex. I love sex. It always comes to Butthead. Their nervous chuckles continued as they turned bright red and started to look at the floor. Uh-huh, Julia said with a wry grin. She glanced out at the printing presses. The fire had spread to another machine. Okay, let's go over a few things, she said, grabbing a piece of chalk and walked over to the chalkboard. Beavis and Butthead sheepishly coughed and looked over her. First, let's talk tits. Julia ripped open her uniform. See these? They're pretty great, right? The two idiots chuckled and stared at each other. Not every woman has tits that big, all right, idiots? She pointed back at the crude drawing, then pointed to her own breasts before grabbing them. Look at how nicely they fit in my hands. She walked over to the men, who were now bright red and nervously chuckling again. She grabbed their hands and immediately placed them on her breasts. She tried not to smirk as Beavis and Butthead shuddered in delight. Get boobs! Moving on. Instant orgasms from touching breasts don't happen. That never happens. The two men looked crestfallen. I mean, breasts can be sensitive. Any part of the body can be sensitive. But, like, that's not how orgasms work. See my face? Julia pointed back to her face as the men stared at her in wonder. This is not the face of someone who's had an orgasm recently. She looked out from the office window. Once more, the flames were climbing up the warehouse walls. All right, last point. Shall we make this an interactive lesson? Beavis and Butthead started to laugh and nod excitedly. Great, get rid of those clothes. Julia carefully took off her uniform and placed it on the table. Beavis and Butthead had ripped off their clothes and stood shaking, panting, barely keeping their shit together. Okay, we're gonna have sex now. The three of us, Julia leaned back onto the table, waiting for Beavis and Butthead to hesitate and process what was about to happen. They didn't. The two men immediately leapt onto the table with Julia, magically without breaking the table or falling off, and proceeded to start thrusting and fucking and grunting. Julia quickly taught them what a clitoris was and how it works, quietly moaning as she kept an eye on the fire below. Both Beavis and Butthead shuddered and chuckled in ecstasy and high-fived each other as they took turns gently licking and nibbling her clit. The two men's ultimate fantasy finally came true. They had had sex. For real. In the flesh. They couldn't believe it finally happened. Their orgasms were so intense, it felt like the walls of the office were burning down. Julia leapt up and grabbed her uniform as Beavis and Butthead stayed on the table, gleefully trembling. Well, it's been real, she said. Gotta run. This was hot. She winked and raced out of the office and away from the fiction department, away from the Ministry of Truth, away from Big Brother forever.
And that was the fiction department as written by Lily Miller. I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah, because she won like twice in a row. It's
right,
amazing.
But she did the library.
Yeah, I know. And she chose the fiction department
and
too.
She was
yeah.
the fiction department on this one.
She's so good.
And there you have it.
And okay, who's O'Brien? O'Brien is the older guy that he thinks that Winston, who's the main character, the protagonist, thinks is his ally, but then turns out to be part of the Thought Police. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he sets it up. He's like, we're a diverse network of spies.
And then he like tortures him for a while with some rats or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds just like O'Brien.
Because he like caught him fucking Julia or something.
It's a classic O'Brien move.
Classic. That guy's a... Watch out for O'Brien. That guy's a dick. Was that a South Park reference that I just made? I think it was. Where did that come from?
Our next story is titled 1980 Foreskin. Captain's log. Stardate 420-69. I know I say this at least once a week, but we really are fucked this time. It's been 6 months since we got sucked into the black hole and had to make an emergency landing in this wackadoo alternate dimension Earth. Spock says we're sometime in the 1980s, but I honestly don't even see anymore. He rubbed his temples. We're not allowed to interfere with this batshit crazy society because blah Starfleet rules, blah blah blah, space-time continuum, whatever. Uhura ran off. No one's heard from her in weeks. She took those crazy, huge Amazonian women we picked up in Sector 8 with her. He sighed. Work blows dick for Skittles right now. All I want to do is hang out in my room and jack off into my triple fleshlight. James T. Kirk's diary entry for Stardate 42069 ended with the meaty thud of a club making contact with a human head. When he woke, he found himself tied up in a small, sterile room facing a huge window screen with the rest of the crew of the Enterprise. Well, like the regular non-red shirt crew. Uhura stood in front of them, wearing nothing but two palm fronds and a smile. Gentlemen, I've brought you here to bear witness to the start of a revolution. She turned as a young, dark-haired woman entered the room. Julia, she breathed. Julia kissed Uhura in greeting. French style, lots of tongue. Ready? Uhura nodded and flicked the television on to reveal the scene in the next room. One emaciated figure lay strapped to a metal table with pads attached to his body. He was crying out to the burly man who was fiddling with an egg timer. O'Brien, I thought we had a connection. An understanding, O'Brien. A budding romance. A bromance. Winston, O'Brien adjusted his glasses on the bridge of his nose with his left hand and shifted his trouser snake with his right. You're being intentionally stupid again, Winston. Winston gasped as O'Brien cranked the dial up a few notches. O'Brien brought the dial back to zero after just a moment and lovingly pushed sweaty hair back from Winston's pale face. O'Brien brought his lips to Winston's ear. If the party says 2 and 2 make 5, then what do 2 and 2 make? Julia leaned forward and pressed a button on the telescreen. Foreplay, she called into the room. That's what it makes, Dick. The heads of both men jerked towards the television. Female? O'Brien's eye twitched. Uhura pressed another button, and the door to room 101 opened to reveal a stream of Amazonian women. After filling in, the Amazonians circled the men, shoulder to shoulder, a giant wall of skinny and fat and soft and hard and pokey and horny women of all sizes. Some had breasts as unyielding and lumpy as boulders. Some had flaps as soft as week-old balloons. Some had fingernail-sized areolas that lay inverted on flat chests. Two of them had visible penises. The only trait they all shared was that every single one of them was fucking hot and devastatingly sexy. Kirk's hips rocked in his polyester tight pants. He whispered to himself, "Bazunga." The shortest of the bunch, who was still at least a foot taller than O'Brien, approached O'Brien and sniffed him through her bull ring. Her black hair was buzzed close to her head, and her thighs were each the size of O'Brien's barrel chest. The woman pet his hair. Snoo, snoo. O'Brien blanched. I beg your pardon? Snoo, snoo. She pet his head again, more forcefully this time, until his knees buckled beneath him. Kirk saw a bead of precipitation wet the front of his trousers. What is that, urine? Precum? Both? He imagined. O'Brien laid down on the table next to Winston and clasped his hand. The first Amazonian climbed aboard, pastrami pocket hanging just inches over O'Brien's face. She held her stance at them and barked, "Consent?" "Yes," O'Brien hissed, then immediately silenced himself. He screwed his eyes shut and growled at Winston. "Keep your head, man. Sex is not for pleasure. This is for procreation, nothing else." Winston sunk even further into his restraints. "No, I would never betray Julia. She loves me too much." A snort sounded from the other room. Clearly from Julia. Winston and O'Brien wrenched their heads to the side to see Julia and all of her male gaze serving slender-waisted glory. "Oh, Winston, do you honestly think that a savvy, hot-ass 20-something nymphomaniac would fall in love with a semi-intelligent 40-something after glancing at him, like, once? Do you think I was created for the sole purpose of being your boinkable sounding board?" O'Brien adjusted his glasses in that fucking patronizing way of his. "Do you want me to answer that?" Julia gave a signal, and the hovering Amazonian plopped down onto his face, yoni first. The hairs of his mustache tickled her perineum, and she giggle-gasped a mini-climax. Julia's gaze hardened. "We are going to reshape this planet in our vision." The Amazonian raised up to reveal a gasping O'Brien. "Oh, God. Oh, God. Sit on me one more time. Come on. Get it back over here. Smother me, smash me, please, please, whatever this snoo-snoo is, I want more." The smile under his wet mustache mirrored the vertical smile descending upon him. "Snoo, snoo, 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 snoo," the Amazonians chanted. "Beaver hungry," a woman in a saber-tooth necklace cried out. Julia called out to the men over their chants. You two know all about doublespeak, but do you know anything about double penetration? Winston moaned with desire, and O'Brien's obelisk popped through the lowest rung of his overalls. The largest Amazonian pushed her way to the front of the crowd and licked her lips. Julia's grin widened. Winston, O'Brien, meet Cleo. Cleo greeted O'Brien, manhole first. She lifted him bodily off the table and settled him down over Winston so that Winston's rock-hard gear shift popped through O'Brien's ring and shifted him into overdrive. The Enterprise crew gasped. O'Brien was levitating. No, literally, levitating. His feet lifted off the ground with the power of the thrusts at his fore and stern. Uhura turned to the crew. The Amazonians have a lot of pent-up energy. Anybody up for a little game of Fap-a-mole? The men cried out as their arms popped out of their sockets from raising them too quickly in the restraints. Uhura knelt to reveal a glory hole switchboard embedded in the telescreen interface. The Enterprise crew inserted themselves and the hungry Amazonians jizzed out jazz solos on their dong trumpets. Meanwhile, decades worth of sexual frustration was building to a boiling point in O'Brien. The white-hot lava climbing up his Mount Vesuvius was seconds away from showering the people of Pompeii. Winston, O'Brien whispered through pumps. Thank you for being a friend, Winston. You traveled down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant, Winston. Winston's eyes prickled with tears. And if I threw a party, O'Brien, and invited everyone I knew, O'Brien shoved his hand between a wet, bushy thicket to stroke Winston's wet cheek. You would see the biggest gift would be from me, Winston. And the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend. Spock and Kirk glanced at each other and said, I love you, man. They whispered it to each other over and over again. I love you, man. I love you, man. As they came, flesh phasers set to guy love. The end.
And that was O'Brien, as written by Natalie Warner.
Who, by the way, I just have to say, jumped into our ill-fated Emerald City Comic-Con show that we had about 9 writers drop out of. She jumped in to write erotic fan fiction about Sandman, the comic, with only, what, a week and a half to the show?
Yeah, and she did really well.
And fucking nailed it. It was so good. Anyway, I seem to remember her placing in the show, but I don't have the exact rankings. But anyway, suffice it to say, I love Natalie Warner with every fiber of my being. And please listen to her podcast. She has that romance podcast. Do you remember what it's called? Bodice Rippers, right?
Bodice Rippers, yeah.
Bodice Rippers, yeah. It is. She is so fucking funny. Great, we have one more. So instead of just assigning Winston Smith, because that would be boring, we decided to assign his journal, which is hilarious.
I gotta understand what they're doing to me.
Yeah, and you're like, read the fucking book, dude. Come on, it's not that hard. Like, it's fucking... Anyway, what if it's, like, all just a... Like, they're all just fucking with me. Like, oh, yeah, wouldn't that be weird? It's like, he's such a basic fucking dude.
It's like the dumbest guy you ever met is now the most profound person.
But doesn't it feel like, when you read it, didn't it feel like this is the dumbest guy ever?
He's so dumb.
All of his takes are lukewarm at best.
And he also just thinks like, oh, I'm going to buy a knickknack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know,
that'll make me feel something.
You know you're going to get killed for having a knickknack. Of all the things you're going to do, a rando knickknack.
That's to me what's so dumb about this book and why I had such a hard time with it. It's like, what if old white guys had to buy knickknacks to feel something?
This gin that I get isn't the good gin.
Right. This gin is mediocre at best. Like, that's the hardship. I don't know. It's like so...
And I only get to have sex with this younger woman than me in a strange place that I go to.
Half his age in a moor. I'm just saying. I just... Yeah.
And he gets mad. Like, she's like, this is where we do it. And this is the clearing I do it with other dudes in. And he's like, you do it with other dudes. And she's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, I hate Big Brother so much that I think that's hot.
And she's like, did feminism even happen? It's like fucking dumb as shit. Anyway,
your favorite book is lame.
Your faves are problematic, all of you.
Our last story is titled Untitled. Winston Smith is into some nasty shit. One time in his very late 20s, Winston and his girlfriend snuck into the Ministry of Truth overnight. He handcuffed his lady friend to a desk and ate her out by spelling, Big Brother is watching, into her very confused vagina. In college. I'm just trying to picture a confused vagina right now. Which, knowing my straight friends, there's probably a lot of them. A lot of confused vaginas, just like, what the fuck is going on now? Who the fuck told them to do that? Okay. In college, he got really drunk on 99 bananas and blew a guy at a thought crime toga party. I mean, who isn't a little bi in college? Am I right, you Oberlin grads? When the load shot in his mouth, he thought it would be funny to spit it back onto the guy's face. Turns out, it was zero funny. As someone who suffers from climacophilia, which is the arousal of falling downstairs, he convinced a woman to lay at the base with her legs spread open so he could fuck her after tumbling down from the second floor. It went pretty much as expected. He did a triple Lutz and landed perfectly inside of her. 13 out of 10. Would recommend. Winston documents all his sexual adventures in a journal that was recently confiscated and thrown into the memory hole, which is also a term for a bottom who never forgets a dick. For example, I was at a party and ran into this memory hole I hooked up with a few years ago. The little bastard saw me and said, oh, look, it's that total top Chad who finished and then was so tired that he had to get going. Nice to see you too, puta. At the bottom of the memory hole was a young throwaway character whose sole job was to take things that had truths, burn them, and replace them with alternative facts. She lived and breathed Big Brother. She had all the Big Brother action figures. She walked around the office saying things like, Big Brother is bae, and I am shook by Big Brother. Literally dead from Big Brother. She was the fucking worst. When the journal landed in her hands, she wasn't sure what to do. It looked familiar, but the struggle to recall where she'd seen one of these before, sort of like an audience trying to remember if this was the plot of 1984 or Brave New World. She opened the journal in the middle and read the first entry she came across. April 25th. It's not too hot and not too cold. And all I need is a light jacket. Julia and I are now hiding away in our rented room. We arrived this morning and I'm still feeling her out. One moment we agree on rebelling, another she's shouting her allegiance during 2 minutes hate, which is also a term for masturbating quickly before a date. Because you know if you get drunk, you'll hook up with them since you chose a bar 2 blocks from your apartment. I took a shower while she checked the space for surveillance. I turned on the hot water and soaped up my man body. My left hand moved down my chest, lingered around my treasure trail, and then inched further south. Apparently, my rebellious nature wasn't the only thing at attention, if you know what I mean. I'm talking about my penis. I'll spare you the rest of the details, but let's just say I masturbated. Because that's what I did. After drying up and heading to the main room, we found a bottle of wine tucked behind an empty bookshelf. We're gonna crack it open in a few and raise a glass to freedom. April 26th. I won't point any fingers, but someone thought it was a good idea to live on the exhibitionist edge and hook up in front of the telescreen. It me. Julia was like, I'm into some weird shit, but this could get us killed. And I was like, carpe diem, Jules. Live your best self, baby. She eventually warmed up to the idea and was ready for sexy time. She pushed her pants down to reveal she was wearing more pants. I turned on the telescreen and was surprised to see two Oceania women in their early 20s sitting in a room. The one on the left was holding a martini and said, "Hey, bitches!" Then the one on the right raised her hand from a small mirror with white powder and chimed in, "Show us your tits!" Julia looked at me like, "Bitch, I ain't doing that." So I lifted up my shirt and flashed my nips. The woman on the left then told us to make out, so I grabbed Julia and we did that thing where one of us opens our mouth for a French kiss and the other thought it was just a smooch, so we pushed back and tried again, but awkwardly flipped positions. You've all been there. We finally got it down, just as something else came up. "I can see you're excited," the woman on the right said. "Show us what you're working with." I unzipped and took out all 7 inches, which is newspeak for 5.5. The left girl told me to go down on Julia because she likes it when women lead. Michelle Obama 2020, y'all. I propped her legs on my shoulder and ate her out for the obligatory 3 minutes required before a man can stop and ask if it's his turn now. Where is the lie? The women on the screen were not amused. "Keep going until she comes," the left woman said. It was my first time going down on Julia, and I wanted to impress her, so I started pretending my tongue was a soccer ball moving across the field. I played keep away for a few more minutes while Julia's breathing heightened. "That's it," she said. "That's the spot. Keep going. Yes, 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 yes. Oh my fucking God, Winston, I'm going to come." That was the biggest orgasm of her day. Julia let out a huge sigh when she finished, and the left woman on the telescreen chimed in, "Old people are so boring." "Let's see who's next." And the screen went black. The memory hole worker had read enough. It was time to revise history and make this story gone from our memories, just like Airwalks or No Fear t-shirts. She tossed the journal into the fire and noted in her books that Winston pledged his allegiance to Big Brother. She then picked up her red pen and went to town on her next assignment, abolishing the Electoral College. The end.
That was Winston Smith's journal as written by Jared Schwartz. Anyway, that's the thing that we do.
So that's what we do. We're here on the first Thursday of every month here at the Booksmith in the Upper Haight. You can go to booksmith.com/shipwreck to see our upcoming shows. You can also like us on Facebook. We post all of our events there, as well as several photos from our past events, including this one. What else? We got shows coming up. We're going to be at New York Comic Con. That's it.
That's it.
We'll see you at the next show. Thanks, guys.
You guys are beautiful.
You're all of my favorites.